This is an exclusive hot egg.
Welcome, welcome all to this revival episode of the Why to How podcast, where we explore adventures in STEM. After an amazing Canada-wide science fair a few months ago, I thought I wanted to check in with our Platinum and Best Project Award winners to learn more about their science fair projects and also the adventures that they've had along the way. And that's exactly what we're doing here today with Jasmine. Today, Jasmine, a grade 10 student from Waterloo Wellington region and our Intermediate Platinum Award Discover winner at Canada-wide Science Fair 2022, she won with her project Phosphate Removal from Groundwater Using Mussel Shell Biochar. So I've got plenty of questions, and I've asked our wonderful community for some question suggestions as well. We've got a Discord audience joined live with us as well. So without further delay, let's get into it. Jasmine, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to start off by introducing yourself a little bit, telling us what your project was about?
Sure. Hi, my name is Jasmine. I just started grade 11, but my previous project was my grade 10 project. The title sounds a little bit complicated, but basically all I did was I made biochars, and biochar is a product very similar to charcoal. And I produced it by taking locally accessible waste products. So that's things like pumpkin vines, grape vines, municipal food waste, even dandelion leaves. And then I used a propane barbecue and some paint cans with holes in it to create like a limited oxygen environment. I raised the temperature really high and I created biochars, which the aim was to use those biochars to remove phosphate from water. Phosphate's a pretty harmful contaminant and it can really hurt aquatic wildlife. So in the first test, I tried removing the phosphate from the water with the biochars, and it actually resulted in a lot of additional leaching. And so the second part of my experiment was all about modifying my biochars to reduce that additional leaching and hopefully get it to a point of removal. And the modification method that I chose was mussel shells, because that's an accessible waste product versus like what's typically used to modify biochars right now are chemical reagents. So solutions that are like produced in a lab environment that might be expensive or inaccessible for some producers. So the mussel shells were an alternative. And then I actually like reduced the amount of additional phosphate leaching quite a bit, but I didn't quite get to the point of removal. So yeah, that's kind of a summary of my experiment.
Cool. Like what a cool thing to study. So where did this idea come from? How did you come up with the idea? Why this? Why biochar?
Yeah. So I think it's maybe my grade 8 experiment, which is also the experiment I entered into grade 9 because of like the weird pandemic thing, but it was focusing on algal blooms. And so I did a whole experiment about synthetic versus organic commercial fertilizers. And I found that there wasn't a huge difference in terms of like the nitrate leaching that I saw from those fertilizers. And I also learned more about like how phosphate is probably a bigger component of algal blooms. And so I kind of realized that like maybe we need to look at ways to take phosphate out of the water and take these contaminants out of the water, because they're like agriculture is like, it's always going to be there. There's always going to be fertilizer runoff. So how can we mitigate that? And then I started doing some research and just like going through Google Scholar and looking up different solutions that people were trying to use. And biochar is kind of like a field that has been gaining new popularity. And so when I found that in a couple of different articles, I thought it was really interesting. And I also found like a couple professors who who work at a local university who actually specialize in that area as well. So it was just a really like convenient and great opportunity to follow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. And so I guess the follow-up question to that is, how did you learn all about biochar and phosphate removal? Like, where did you find this information to even start your project?
Yeah, so everything's pretty much on the internet now. Google Scholar was like a great tool because people are publishing articles, and I'd say like maybe reach out to a professor or someone nearby just so you can get access to those articles, because like some of them are behind a paywall and it is helpful to have someone who can like help you read those articles. So that was like a really big resource for me was Google Scholar. And then also just like getting textbooks from the library. There are surprisingly like some really specific textbooks. Like, there's a huge textbook that's just on biochar. And I didn't expect that I would find it, but I found it at my local library. So there's things like that that are unexpected. But if you look around on the internet or in the library, you'll probably find some resources.
Yeah, I mean, in our Discord community, we are big fans of the library. We've been talking about it a lot recently, especially with the fact that you can get a whole bunch of resources even online for free from Libby, and also LinkedIn Learning is on there now as well. And I mean, just the fact that libraries are all connected, you can order whatever book, basically whatever book exists out there, order it to your local library.
If you check with your like local university, you might also be able to get a civilian library card, which is really helpful as well. Like, you can access their textbooks if you apply for it. So that's another thing to look into.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good idea. Didn't even think about that one. So throughout the process of doing this science fair project of you, were there certain people that supported you? Was it like, did the people at the library help you find the books you needed? Did you have mentors to turn to?
Yeah, so this was actually my first year finding a mentor. The year before, I like was too scared to kind of reach out to anybody. But this year, I finally decided I was going to like cold email some people. And it's really lucky. But the first professor I cold emailed actually came back to me within a couple of days and was like, yeah, this is a fun idea. Why not? And so she was a really great person throughout the whole thing. I also checked her out on Rate My Professor beforehand, but like, she's just an amazing professor. Everyone loves her. And there always are going to be some people who are willing to lend you a helping hand. And so she was great. She answered all of my questions. She like provided access to the lab, which was a huge part of my project, like that I had never incorporated before. I actually got to do some analysis in the lab because of her and because of the resources she provided. And then it's just great to have someone with so much knowledge and so many years of experience to bounce your ideas off of, because like, I was completely new to this field and it's hard to navigate and like come up with good ideas and everything if you don't have someone to like ask questions and like try and figure out different aspects and like that you might not have even known about before. So it was great to have her. And then her whole research group was amazing. I worked really closely with her lab technician because she had to teach me everything, like the basics of being in a lab, from electronic pipetting to diluting things. And she was just amazing. Like, it was great to have her there the entire time, and meeting co-op students and graduate students who like were willing to have a chat was really nice. Yeah.
That's so cool that you learned all of those skills along the way as well. And yeah, your mentor really helped like get the whole team involved. And like, what a cool experience to be having as a high school student, getting access to a lab like that well before university, well before you're assigned to do research, you know, post-graduation sort of thing. Do you have advice for students on how to find a mentor? How did you go about emailing them? How did you find them? What did you put in the email? Did you tell a good story?
Yeah. I'd say like, if you're gonna email, like look at universities by you and don't discriminate between universities. I know like some people like only email like one university, but if you have multiple around you, like just email as many people as you can. Make sure you research them as well, like research into the person and find out their specialty, know what they're doing, look at their papers a bit. It's good to like show that you've invested time into this person and that you actually care about having a like real mentorship, and you're not just firing off some email that took you like 2 minutes to write. And it's also a really good idea to have an idea to propose. It might not be the idea that you go with all the way, but it's good to show that you have genuine interest and this isn't just like something you're doing because you like you want it to be something that you care about and show that you have this passion, and then they're probably more likely to want to help you. So yeah, just make sure your email's genuine. Mine was super naive, but it was genuine and it worked out. So
I love that. And it is. It's about creating that personal connection, isn't it? You're not just spamming a bunch of people, just being like, hi, I want your help. Please help me. You have to actually create that connection and say like, I'd really like your help. And this is my project. This is what I think would be a great fit for you. This is what I love about the work that you do. And yeah, as you say, create that authentic connection between one another. You did good. Did real good.
Yeah.
So tell us, what did you discover throughout this process? What was the discovery that you found through the Science Aid project? Was there something you discovered about yourself and your love of biochar?
Yeah, so I learned a lot of things, and not everything had to do with, like, what I initially thought it was going to be. I started off looking at phosphate, and first of all, like, the muscle cell thing was pretty cool to see that much of a reduction. It was a 5x reduction, which didn't get to the point of removal, but it was still, like, really interesting to see how much effect that this added calcium, like, that's at least that's what I think happened, that the calcium was kind of what helped reduce that phosphate. So that was really cool to see that it had such a big impact, and that, like, just using the muscle shell to modify the biochar, like, could do so much. But then also it was interesting because the way we analyzed it, we used, like, I was very lucky to be able to use some resources like a mass spectrometer. And so that had, like, the full element analysis, and I could see, like, everything that was in those water samples, and afterwards, like, what was taken out and what might have been added. And so it was crazy to see, like, not just the phosphate, but also there was a 94% copper reduction, which wasn't what I expected. Like, I didn't go into this thinking the copper is going to be reduced. I wasn't even looking at the copper originally. But, like, if you go through all of the elements and you look at, like, the cations and the anions, you start to see some other interesting opportunities that come with, like, what you're doing, and all that data was so exciting to see. And then it was also, like, some of the failures were exciting to look at too. Like, the amount of potassium that the dandelion leaves leached out was insane. It was, I've never seen anything like it. So even though that's the exact opposite of what I wanted, maybe it could be a potassium fertilizer, who knows? But it was interesting to see that.
What I really like about your project too is that it just goes to show that a Platinum Award winner, the project conclusion doesn't have to prove the hypothesis correct, right? Like, it's not like a science fair project has to be something that is successful in the end. You still managed to put together an incredible science fair project. You came to a conclusion that went against what you thought was going to happen, but you still presented it in a way that obviously captured the judges' attention. And here you are, Platinum Award winner for Candlewide Science Fair 2022.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, a lot of pressure that your research has to, like, come to fruition. But the reality is, in science, it's not, like, you're probably not going to get the most amazing result in, like, 6 months of research. It takes trial and error. And I think that's something that it's good to show. And you learn so much from every step. So why not present it?
Could you imagine if every research project just, like, was done after 6 months, just exactly what we wanted?
I mean, it would be great.
It would be great. But then what would you do next year, you know? Completely different project. True. So we've got a question from Johan in the Discord community. He's asking, following up from your pretty successful project, would you foresee difficulties in the implementation of such a method in real-life setting? Could there be issues with procuring the necessary resources or perhaps other challenges?
Yeah, so I think, like, the entire time I was doing this project, a huge part of it was kind of really considering the field application, because I'm lucky my professor has had a lot of, like, experience with the field and field studies. And a lot of it was trying to make sure to keep it reasonable and practical. So other studies, like, some of them were grinding up the biochar into a really fine dust, and that would have increased surface area, and I probably would have gotten a better result with that. But the thing is that in a field, if you put out a bunch of biochar dust into the water, it's hard to take it back out. Like, the point of biochar is you want to absorb all those contaminants and then remove the biochar, maybe use it as a soil amendment or somewhere else, but you need to be able to take it out. So that was something that, like, I tried to make sure that my experiment was as, like, field ready as possible. But certainly things like the muscle shell powder, I'm not super familiar with, like, all the different industrial equipment that could be used, but finding something to grind the muscle shells as well, I'm sure it's possible, but it could be something that's a little bit difficult for, like, that side of the experiment.
Yeah, I really think what set your project apart was the fact that you didn't just come up with a theoretical project, but you actually showed it had real-world application, and also it was a practical use. And that's what we want from discovery projects. We want to see that there's actually a practical implementation of your project, and you're telling a good story. Like, this is why it's important for us. This is what you want to know, and this is how it might actually be done in the real world. Because, as you say, you'd get better scientific results if you ground that powder down, but if it's not applicable to what would happen in the real world, then kind of what's the point? You know, it's good information to know, I guess, but it's difficult, right? So I love that about your project. Prab in the chat is also asking, how long did it take you to complete your project? So you said about 6 months, but do you want to break down that timeline a bit more for us?
Yeah, so my project was actually kind of a late starter. I started, like, I reached out to the professor early on, maybe September-ish, but because of COVID and because of, like, certain conflicts with schedule, I actually couldn't get in the lab until, like, winter. So December and January, which is actually really, really, like, kind of late for most projects. Before then, it was just a lot of, like, background research and making sure I could send some samples in, but there wasn't a whole lot I could do early on. So it had to be, like, experimental design and looking into the research and trying to pick out the best different, like, organic matter. And then it was also, like, a lot of it I could do at home as well. So I could make my biochars on a propane barbecue, which was something that was really interesting to figure out because that had some issues with it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then also, like, grinding up the powders and, like, the mussel shell powder and doing all that stuff. That was something that I did at home. And then later I transitioned to the lab in the winter. So it was probably, like, September-ish to when the actual science fair was.
Yeah. And that's good, too, because I think a lot of students, they get to this point in time, you know, around September time, and they feel like they're already behind. But realistically, 6 months is a good amount of time to be doing a science fair project. Like, that's why UScience Canada says September is the start of the science fair season, and that quite a lot of students start having their ideas right now and they start implementing them over winter. Now, obviously 12 months would be wonderful, but you know, when you finish a big long research project, sometimes you do just want a break. And so it's nice to see that not only were you coming to this quite late, but you also still managed to put together an award-winning project in what you think is a short amount of time. Atheroma in the chat wants to know what your favorite part of the project was.
I think, like, definitely getting to have that lab opportunity and meeting so many really cool people. Like, to be honest, science fair is just kind of an excuse to get into a lab and to, like, have that experience and to do an experiment, because you can, like, just put in an email, hey, I'm doing a science fair. And then all of a sudden you get this really cool access that I wouldn't have had before. And so, yeah, it was great to get to do an experiment in a lab. I loved every single part of it. It was super nerve-wracking, and, like, you have to be really mindful in the lab environment because, like, dangerous stuff is in a lab, and, you know, you don't want to ingest anything by accident, and you have to be, like, really careful with the equipment. I remember doing, like, vacuum filtering, and you really don't want to get moisture in the device. So the entire time I was, like, shaking doing it, but it was such a cool experience to see. And because it kind of aligns with what I want for my future, it was really cool to, like, get to have that experience beforehand, just so I could confirm that this is something I'm still interested in. And then meeting all these people with, like, so many different backgrounds, like lab technicians and students who are doing different co-ops. And, like, the professor I was working with, her husband is actually, like, they're both the head of their own research group together, which I think is just such a cool life story to, like, learn about and see what their history is, and kind of compare, like, what you want to do in your life maybe with that. So it was really cool to meet people and have new experiences, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I love that too. Science fair projects are the best excuse to do pretty much whatever you want to, right? Like, you know, some of the winners last year, we had them firing rockets in the park, and they were questioned by, like, neighbors just being like, hey, like, what are you doing? And as soon as they say it's a science fair project, everyone's like, oh, cool, tell me more. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, right? Everyone thinks it's such a nerdy thing to do, but really you get the coolest life experiences that you could ever possibly imagine and wish for as a high school student. It's fantastic. So question for you then. On this project of yours, can you describe to us what you felt when the results came clear? So when you got the results back, that very first test that you did, what feelings went through your body?
Like, there were quite a few tests. So, I mean, before every test I did, there was, like, so much anticipation because you just want to see what's going to happen, like, whether or not anything's going to change. And it's also interesting if nothing changes. But, like, there's so much data that something's going to change. But it's interesting just to see all the different variables. And I guess, like, looking through the results, it would be exciting to get them. And I would just spend, like, an hour going through every different spreadsheet, looking at everything. And it was exciting to see, like, some results, and then other results were like, maybe we got to improve this or work on this. And then it was just like, it, each time you get a result, it opens up a new door. So maybe, like, next year I'll look at this aspect of it, or, like, I'll continue to improve this part of it. So yeah, getting the results were always super exciting. And even if it, like, wasn't exactly what I was looking for, there was always something that was like, wow, that's kind of cool. So, I mean, it was always a fun time.
always a silver lining, right? Even if the results don't come back the way you wanted them to. So how did that feeling compare then to hearing your name being called out as a Platinum Award winner?
Yeah, so I was actually doing homework while I was, like, watching the award ceremony because I didn't really expect much from it. Mm-hmm. So after, like, last year I had gone to silver. So after the silver, like, finished, I was like, okay, I don't really have to pay attention to this anymore. But I kept it on because, like, I have friends on my team who have some really amazing projects and, like, I care about their projects as well. So it was really cool to, like, hear my name, and I didn't exactly know what it was for at first, but then... like, it was cool. Everyone was really supportive, and I didn't expect it, so it was, like, kind of more sweet, because it was like, wow, I didn't know that was going to happen. And, yeah, mm-hmm. it was a nice result at the end of the day.
Nice. I'm glad. You should be very proud. It's a absolutely incredible achievement, and I can only just offer all of the congratulations I can possibly give to someone for doing such a fantastic science fair project, really. So, question for you then. From Johan in the Discord chat, have you also been in touch with people who might be purchasing and implementing biochars? So sort of like looking beyond your science fair project and the real world implementation of it?
Oh, yeah. So this year I'm actually still like continuing to do biochars, and like because last year was kind of like a trial run. It was my first research that I've actually done in like a scientific environment, I guess, where everything is precise and like you start to learn what it takes to produce accurate results. And mm-hmm. so this year I am kind of looking at maybe like testing it out more in a different environment and looking at like how it might actually work in the real world, and doing some more precise analysis with like more precise real world conditions. So we're looking at that, and we're also trying to like implement different variables that might help reflect more real world. And so yeah, so like this year I think I'm just continuing to develop my research and see what opportunities come with that, and trying to like get it even more serious than it was before. And just, yeah.
And do you foresee some challenges with this next step? Like what are the things you're most conscious of as you're fleshing out this idea?
Yeah. I mean, there are always like a lot of challenges. Right now I'm looking at a different amendment strategy that I was thinking might be a little bit more realistic for like small scale, because, with the types of like feedstocks or organic matter that I'm choosing, I'm kind of looking at it like, oh, if you're a farmer and you have this like waste product, you can make your own biochar. You could like do this instead of disposing of it in a different, maybe more environmentally harmful way, because biochar, like it is actually it's a pretty good method of carbon sequestration if done properly. So yeah, like I'm looking at that, but then also like some of the samples that I'm collecting, I'm not sure if they're going to 100% work out the way I want them to. And I'm waiting for some of that analysis. And I just want to make sure there isn't too like high of a concentration of something harmful in it, because that would be hard to implement if there was like a lot of sodium coming off of it or a lot of some other leaching that I don't want. Like that's always a challenge, making sure that contaminants aren't coming off of it. Yeah.
So talking about those challenges as well, Prabnor in the chat wants to know, what is the greatest difficulty you faced and how did you get over it?
Yeah, I think early on, figuring out how to make the biochars was actually pretty difficult, because the professor I was working with, she like didn't really make her own biochars that often before. And usually you would like have a pyrolysis kiln maybe, but that's super expensive. And like, they're actually applying to get one eventually, I think, but it takes a while for that to go through. So for me to make my biochar is like figuring out the right method. First, it started with a tiny muffle furnace with like the smallest crucible, and that went fine for the first test. And then it started smoking for the second and third like test, which you can't have happen in a lab nor a university. No. Because like there are smoke detectors, and it was worse because like the building is connected to the math building. So there's a lot of people in that building. And if I set the smoke detectors off, everyone has to evacuate. So that was a very scary situation, and like a lot of quickly dousing things in water to make sure like it wasn't on fire, but it was smoking for some reason. So maybe it was like getting super close to that point. We didn't really know, but we decided like we can't go forward with this method. And then it came to like figuring out how to do the barbecue. And at this point, like, it was getting a little bit colder where I am. So it was, like, hard to keep the barbecue temperature up and hard to figure out how to measure the temperature and measure, like, how quickly the temperature is going up to make sure it's a slow pyrolysis. And so it was just, like, that procedure of making the biochar was actually really difficult. And, like, figuring out how we were going to do the paint cans and making sure that the pressure didn't build up and, like, they explode during it was... It was really important, but also it's a really important step that presented some challenges.
Yeah, I could imagine. Was there anything, I guess, yeah, like in creating the biochar was a good example, but is there any other examples of something that you considered just like a complete failure? Was there anything you were just like, this is it, just don't go past that, let's just try something completely different?
It was interesting when I got back the results because like I got the results for phosphate, I did them all at once, but the first ones I did were actually the ones that came out with like by far the worst results. It was a coincidence, but I tested the dandelion leaves and the edo peels first, and they had like 40 to 60 milligrams per liter of phosphate leaching coming off, which that is like, that would be impossible to minimize. The rest of them actually had more around like 10 to 5 milligrams coming off initially, so that's like more manageable and something that like maybe with a lot of work you could get to the point of removal. But yeah, when I saw the dandelion leaves and the edo peels that came first, it was pretty frightening. It was a pretty frightening prospect, but yeah.
And so what happened, what goes through your head at that point? Like how do you take a step back and reassess and continue on? How do you push past that point?
I mean, at that point, it was just like, let's hopefully test the other samples and they're not the same. And then also, like, you realize maybe I'll have to find different feedstocks or maybe I'll have to take a different approach from phosphate because, like, phosphate removal with biochars is a very, like, new field to biochars and it's probably one of the least successful, like, so far in the literature in terms of removing things. Like, people are having a little bit of difficulty with this and some people are having success, but, like, it's pretty involved to get to that point. So it was, like, maybe I'll have to look at a different contaminant and that's okay because, like, that would also be interesting. But yeah, that was a little bit of a moment where I was reassessing what was going on.
So always there's just another option. There has to be another option.
Yeah.
Was there any point in the whole process that you thought about giving up?
I mean, I didn't know if I would get my results back in time. Like I actually submitted the little description for your experiment with like results have not come back yet for my regional science fair or like for the second part of the testing. And I didn't think it was going to be done in time. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. I mean, we started like actual experimentation in the winter, so it would probably qualify for next year. Like I could just continue like doing research on it then. But I mean, I decided at that point, like, hey, if I get the results back, it's a nice point to stop and then I can start again like next year. And so pushed through, got the results, didn't think much would come out of it because like in my regional science fair, it said results are like inconclusive or like they haven't come back yet. And I mean, it went well. So I guess that's all that counts.
Clearly it went well. Yeah, you're still here. And I mean, obviously you have a passion for science and for scientific research. Where did this passion come from? Like what made you who you are today? Why did you want to do a science lab project?
Yeah, so it's actually like my grade six and my middle school teachers were amazing. It was probably more so my middle school teacher, but like a lot of the Waterloo Wellington Science Fair kids, we all came from like one class. A lot of us came from one classroom. Like I know them well. And it's because of like this elementary school teacher and this middle school teacher. They did literally amazing jobs. They made sure every single person in our class at a science fair, like it was mandatory. They were like, at least try it out. And then I have so much respect for them because they had like 20 kids in their class and yet they managed to get every single kid to submit like their grade 7 science fair. And it was like such a big deal because they had to teach every kid how to write a lab report, teach every kid, like help them edit it, help them with like the project steps. And it was just, those teachers were just so encouraging and I didn't even know science fair existed before them. So I'm just like really grateful to everything they did for all of like us in our class. And some kids stuck with it and like still go to science fair today and some kids stop, but it's like proportionately very high because of that middle school teacher class with science fairs.
I mean, that just shows the power of amazing educators, really. They literally change people's lives by just something as simple as just saying, hey, let's all just do this together as a class. So why should other students do science fair projects, especially because teenagers these days have busy lives? There's a lot going on. There's homework to do. Why should someone take on additional work outside of school?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, there's a couple things. I've discovered a lot of passions through, failed science fair projects. I mean, in grade 9, I just submitted my grade 8 project because I was allowed to, but I was actually, planning a grade 9 project that year, and I had started doing a lot of research into it, and I, didn't have anyone for guidance then, so I kind of got too much into the research, and I just, never actually started the experiment. I was just, researching the whole year, and so I developed a passion for physics then, and, I still am really into physics and keep, reading about physics, but I've developed so many passions because of science fairs and, have discovered so many fields that it just really broadens your horizons. And then again, I used to be such an introverted person, and I couldn't, I would choke when I speak in debate club and all those kinds of things. But doing those interviews and meeting those people and meeting those mentors and seeing that, people want to help you and people are generally nice was a huge thing for me in coming out of my shell and being able to talk in public more. So I think there's a lot to grow with science fairs, and any other extracurricular activity, you don't know where it'll take you. Might as well try.
Exactly. I love that. What a quote. Perfect. So then I guess, what does come next for you?
Yeah,
Science Fair Project 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much exactly that. It's actually really exciting. I'm getting to start another Science Fair project, and this time, because I've had my trial run, I'm talking with my professor about doing some more interesting and more advanced stuff, doing some different types of analysis, potentially writing something and maybe going to get it published, which would be something that's pretty big and something that's pretty cool. And now that we've developed this kind of relationship with mentoring, it's something that and now that I've had some experience, it's something that's more feasible for me. So I'm looking towards that direction with this project. And I mean, I've already started having fun with this project. I'm collecting a lot of samples for different types of amendments and different types of feedstocks and changing things up a bit. And I got to go to some really cool farms in the region, and I had some cool experiences. They turned off the electric fence and I got to stand in a field of cows and just collect some samples. So it was, cool. It's an experience I wouldn't have had before or if I didn't do it. So it's already a lot of fun. And yeah.
Nice. I love that. not to put any pressure on you, because I hate when people say this, but have you got future plans? Have you started thinking about what happens after school? What happens after What happens next, you know? Where are you going to in the future? Do you have?
I mean, immediately, I think it's going to be university and then, figuring throughout that path. But I think, an end goal, I would love to be involved in, academia and scientific research. I love the community. I think the people you meet in, research are some of the coolest people I've ever met. They have the coolest backstories and, the coolest hobbies and interests. And the conversations I have with them are a lot of fun. If you go into a lab, a lot of people think it's this clean, sterile, super neat area, and it has to be neat to some degree, but there's just a turkey pan in our lab and a Buzz Lightyear balloon, and it's cool. These people are amazing, and it's great to get to work with them. So I mean, I'd love to keep going into scientific research. It's something that really interests me, and I tend to prefer the physical sciences, so chemistry and physics, and I think I'll maybe keep going into that and one day hopefully become a scientist and a researcher.
Yeah, Johan saying in the chat that if you have a passion, you might also want to check out the field of biophysics. Could be an interesting future pathway for you.
Yeah. I mean,
keeping
all the pathways open, doing all the sciences in high school.
Mm-hmm. Do as much as you can and always keep the pathways open, because you never know. There's no point making a concrete plan, because guarantee you life will throw you a curveball and you end up somewhere completely different than what you planned.
Yeah.
So just before we wrap up this episode, I've got a couple of big hidden questions for you. Number one, why is STEM important?
That's a good question. I think like from a practical and more altruistic standpoint, maybe it's like it's helping people out, right? We have a lot of issues in our current world today, and innovation and exploration is kind of the only way that we're going to get out of them. And if we stop innovating and stop exploring, then those problems are just going to get worse, and we're never going to be able to like help people out who are already like severely affected by climate change, or who have like, I mean, just the medical industry and agricultural industry in general, like innovation in that field has made so many people's lives better. And that's what science should do. But then like STEM is just important because it allows us to do things that we couldn't do before, and it allows us to know things that we couldn't know before. And I think that's just super exciting. Like I love looking at unassuming things and finding out there's a whole world like contained within them. I mean, I did a project with like dirt, and dirt is so interesting. Like there's so much that goes behind like soil and like just the speck of dirt and like how it clumps together and all that stuff can produce so many different results. So it's great to see like little worlds hidden inside these small things.
Well, you're just sparring out the quotes today. All right, I can't wait to hear your answer to this one then. Any advice for people looking to get involved in science fair projects? Like how do they choose what to focus on? How do you stay motivated?
It froze a little bit, but I'm going to guess that's like advice for people going into science fairs. I think like I was a super shy person, and that actually stopped me from doing science fair in grade 9. I was like, I can't reach out to anyone. No one's going to want to help a high schooler who like doesn't have experience. And, I didn't think anyone would like want to assist, but people are always willing to help. So I'd say like always reach out to people. It's great. You also have to respect that they have priorities besides you, but a lot of people will put aside time to assist. And like, if you go do a science fair, just meeting some judges, like a lot of the judges were so nice and so kind and reached out to me and asked like, hey, if you ever need help with this part of your project or like the statistics, that's my specialty. You can come ask me. And so I've made so many connections, and like you make connections just by trying out. Like you can try it without a mentor. I did half of my projects have been without a mentor, and they've still like done relatively well, and I'm still very proud of those projects. So like if you can't get a mentor now, it's fine, you can make those connections later, but I'd say just go for it. It's a lot of fun. It's been like the most exciting thing for me for a really long time, and it's always made me smile. Like every day it's so much fun to get to go to a lab or get to work on a science fair experiment. So I'd say like go for it. It's an experience regardless.
Yeah, it's one of those things too where, again, like you don't know what you're going to get out of it until you start trying. And it's one of those things that just what you get out of it just exponentially grows year on year on year as you get a bit more comfortable, as you make those connections, as you meet more people. It really can just change your life so quickly. So Johan also wants to know, another big hitter question, since you're working in a field which will ideally be applied by non-scientific individuals, so farmers, for example, or the research that you're coming up with, you know, it's going to be non-scientific people that are the ones that are actually using that knowledge to then do something, change their behavior or do something different in the way they work on the land. How do you think you then tackle science communication? Do you have advice for people trying to communicate large amounts of data to people who don't know the backstory, don't know the context, don't know the jargon?
Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't have any I didn't have a lot of scientific experience going into this. And like, I was faced with giant spreadsheets from the beginning. So I know what like it feels like when someone just gives you all the information like that. Visuals are always great. Visuals are something that's amazing to have, but also like a lot of scientific jargon, it's not really necessary. Like I find when I'm communicating with someone, you don't need it really. It's not like, biochar is very similar to charcoal. Like we have all these terms for things, but like if you can just explain like, oh, biochar is a product that's like charcoal, except maybe you might like raise the temperature slightly differently or modify it slightly differently just because it has a different purpose. Like instead of just making sure to describe like everything that you're going to be talking about in terms of like simple terms, I think is really good. And yeah, like everything just can boil down to normal language. It doesn't need to incorporate that jargon. And that's always what I do. Like when my parents ask about it, I have to remember, I can't call like even a feedstock. I eventually got so used to the term feedstock. I was like, oh, this is just plain English. Right. But I realized, no, it's like, it's a term that's within this field. So I think just like making sure to bounce it off people and like figure out how to say it properly, you get kind of used to like communicating, just removing those terms as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And just and telling it as a story, using a narrative as opposed to trying to explain the scientific method, you know, like just tell it to you as if you're talking to someone like a friend or a family or something. Don't try to present at someone who's asking you a question, but just have a conversation with them. Let them sort of decide what knowledge they already know or what jargon they already use, and sort of build it as a conversation as opposed to a presentation, I think is a good answer. Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic answer. Nailed that one. Is there any other advice you want to give to people before we wrap up today's episode? Any last thoughts you want to leave us all on? Words of wisdom?
I mean, don't have many words of wisdom, but I'd say like, yeah, if there's anything I can emphasize like the most, it's that it's just fun. Like, don't put pressure on yourself. Don't put stress on yourself. I've always gone into these things like not really expecting anything because like I just didn't think I could like do, like I didn't think it would go well necessarily. I was just like, nah, why not? Let's do this. It sounds exciting. It's something that I can do after school that is a little bit different from homework, an excuse to like take a break and go explore something else and meet some new people. And like, that's the most important part, I think, is like having that process and going through it and growing as a person. And if anything comes out of it, that's cool too. But I mean, it's a good time. Like, I think that's the best part.
It is. It's a good time. And I mean, what better way to end on that? It is a good time. This was a good time. I absolutely love this conversation, Jasmine. It's been fantastic getting to know you, hearing all about your adventures in STEM and learning more about your project, which, again, massive congratulations for the Platinum Award. Just truly inspiring. And I loved your words of wisdom. I know you said you didn't have any, but I'm writing down some quotes after this episode for sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, thank you for my first interview. It was great. It was better than I expected. So,
yeah. I mean, far too many technology problems, but that's something that you can't always plan for. So, we'll get better at that. To everyone listening in the Discord, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for your amazing comments and questions along the way. I got lots of great jobs here from everyone watching. Truly a very fun interview. Can't believe this was your very first interview. Hopefully we'll have you back for another one sometime soon. And I can't wait to see what this next project of yours is like. Thank you all for joining us in this episode of Why to How, a podcast where we explore adventures in STEM. If you liked this podcast, consider leaving us a like on our social media. It's just ysc.sjc on Facebook and Instagram, ysc_sjc on Twitter, or join our Discord. It's Purple STEMWave. You can find the link on our website, viewscience.ca. Please leave us a comment with your favourite part of the interview and let us know your own thoughts on the topics we discussed. And if you liked it, please do share a link to the podcast or YouTube video with friends who you think would love to follow along. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, as it really does help us reach more people. We'll have another amazing guest for you on the next episode, so stay tuned for more. Until then, have a wonderful day and stay curious.